I came away from here inspired and excited. And I think that when you get to be a part of a community that they're all fighting the same fight and with people that are willing to help each other out, it's pretty powerful and pretty amazing thing.
Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour, the podcast where we get real about the latest trends and technologies impacting modern manufacturers.
Manufacturing
Happy Hour. Each week, we interview industry experts that are at the top of their craft and give you the tools, tactics, and strategies you need to take your career and your business to the next level. And now, your host, Chris Lukey.
Hey, it's episode 180. 180. Today, it's all about Made in Missouri, an episode recorded live at the 2024 Midwest Manufacturers Trade Show and Conference in Branson, Missouri. And this is one I've wanted to do for a couple years. One, personal bias. I am from St. Louis, Missouri, so I grew up in the state of Missouri. And two, the Missouri Association of Manufacturers is a group that I've been chatting with for quite a while. I've seen them do this event multiple times. I'm a big fan of these regional trade shows, and I really wanted to make it down there, and we finally made it work this year. Kudos to Michael Eaton and Andrew LeGrand, and really the entire Missouri Association of Manufacturers. They are a great crew, constantly advocating for manufacturing in their state, and quite frankly, building a great ecosystem and community of manufacturers in that area. And this episode is a compilation of conversations I had at that event, similar to what we've done in some recent episodes. This is another one where instead of one long interview, we have three shorter interviews woven together. We have three manufacturers from three different parts of Missouri: Springfield, Kansas City, and St. Louis. But I want to be clear that this is really a broader look at what it means to manufacture in the Midwest. So here are three things you can expect from this episode. Our first guest is Pavel Bosovic, founder and CEO of 27 North. They make expedition vans. We're talking adventure vehicles. So not only is this a cool application to discuss, but we also get some other great tips from someone that's been very successful getting a business off the ground in a very short period of time. Second, we've got Josh Shelton, the owner of Etched, the nameplate company. This one was fun because we ended up covering some topics that, you know, just kind of came up along the way. And then third, we talked to Kevin Thompson, a CFO turned leadership coach at Cambridge Air Solutions, a company that is enriching lives and creating healthier work environments through industrial HVAC. This is a company I've been hearing quite a bit of buzz about lately, and the reason behind that buzz is going to be a big part of this last interview. We'll discuss how to create a culture that makes you the talk of the industry, and you're going to hear some culture tips that are a bit unconventional, so stick around for that. Again, throughout all of these, we will be exploring what it means to manufacture in Missouri and the Midwest, and really, how to leverage the other folks in your community or your manufacturing ecosystem. As always, if you want to learn more, if you want to connect with the folks in this episode, if you want to connect with the Missouri Association of Manufacturers, go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/180. That'll take you to the show notes page for this episode. And if you want to join my community, the Manufacturing Happy Hour industry community, well, go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/community. That'll take you to our LinkedIn page, where there are nearly 700 manufacturing leaders that are constantly helping one another connect with the right folks in industry. It's very much in the spirit of this episode. So again, that's the Manufacturing Happy Hour industry community. Shoot me a direct message on LinkedIn to let me know you're interested in joining, because it's a private group, and I want to make sure there's context for your interest in joining the group. Again, that's manufacturinghappyhour.com/community. Okay, it's time for our first interview, so let's head down to Branson to meet up with Pavel Bosovic. Pavel, pleasure to meet you.
Likewise, Chris.
This has been a long time coming. I've been watching the journey of you making these adventure vans on a mass scale. You're very active on social media, so it's easy to follow that path. And I appreciate the transparency you provide there. So the first question I want to dive into is, I feel like van life, for example, is a very popular concept in the U.S. But I think a lot of people think of it from like a do-it-yourself standpoint. Someone's converting a school bus. Someone's converting a Mercedes Sprinter van in their spare time in their backyard.
Yeah.
But you've done this on a mass scale. So I have to ask, where did you come up with the idea to almost industrialize this process?
Yeah, so I would even take it a step further back and say it's probably somewhere whenever the hippie era is probably what first kind of kicked off this van life. I'd say it starts with like the Schoolie and Burning Man, a little bit of all of that. And so now with the modern day van life, well, that community continued to build their own vans down. So school buses, vans, mm-hmm. and it created a culture of people wanting to go and explore and disconnect from society and connect with nature. And I had created my first van and we had listed online, and the wonderful Pilots out of Denver, Colorado purchased it. And that's where the idea came. I'm like, wait, it's not just these, lack of a better word, hippies or, you know, youngsters that want to go do this. There's working professionals that want to experience this too, and they're willing to pay for it. Yeah. And so we created a bunch of ads and we posted on the internet, and a lot of C-level executives, business owners, entrepreneurs were willing to pay a premium cost of a professionally built one. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that's where that idea was born.
Yeah. And I don't doubt that, you know, they probably don't have as much time as someone that's younger. That's like, this is what I'm doing in my spare time. I could see an executive being like, look, I just want it done.
Exactly.
You know, give me your best.
Exactly. Or like these pilots, they only have a couple of days, you know, every few weeks. And mm-hmm. so I asked them, you know, why don't you guys build your own, you know, with us? They're like, it would take us probably 4 or 5 years and we want to go next weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I follow you. Well, I have to ask then, how did you build a process around this, for example, like something that is repeatable? Tell us a bit about that.
Trial and error. I wish there was a secret sauce, or I could say, hey, my bachelor's degree helped. It definitely accelerated the process. It helped me lay the foundation, know the vocabulary. But like in any new business or any new product that you launch, the processes is the hardest part. So we started simple. We were like one van at a time. We had like 6-7 key players, and we documented the process. Mm-hmm. We documented how much glue down to how many screws. And see, a lot of people, they make the mistake of not tracking. They'll find like little things. Instead of saying 10 screws, they'll say, oh, a handful of screws. Mm-hmm. Now, the earlier on you start documenting the detailed process, the quicker you can scale it.
Yeah.
So once we had our first van really documented, then we could scale and build off of that. We could perfect, we can swap out screws, we can swap out parts. We're on a weekly basis swapping out, upgrading parts, but we have that baseline. That's what my recommendation would be for anyone launching a new product or company, is create a baseline. It doesn't have to be perfect, doesn't have to be the best. Look at the first iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's called a brick nowadays for a reason, because I look back, I held it recently. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
I remember this used to be the coolest thing ever.
I still have an old iPad 2 that I don't use anymore, but I see how far those things come and how quick they come. I like what you said about documenting the details, because I think that's where a lot of people get tripped up. And your tangible example of, hey, don't say a handful of screws, say this many screws. And because I document processes with my podcast as well. And when I'm doing it for the first time, it almost feels like I'm being overly detailed. But it's one of those things that if I don't do it for a month afterwards, I can look back at that standard operating procedure. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember a lot faster how to do that now.
Oh, most definitely. I remember when I started podcasting, and there's like even a small thing, like take a selfie with the person you're interviewing. It's like, how hard could that be to remember?
Yeah.
But when you have so much going on,
you
forget that, versus if you have that process, like our average build, we're past 500 parts, components. Mm-hmm. That's not including the van. And an average human can memorize, what, 6-7 things?
Mm-hmm.
And so even look at your purchasing, your buyer. Whenever they go to buy again for next month, they're not going to remember 500 parts.
Yeah.
And then if they do order screws, how do you define a handful?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a handful for me is, you know, 50, maybe 60 pieces.
Yeah, however many can fit in your hand, right?
A handful for our buyer is 2 or 3.
Right.
And so you have to be as specific, as precise as you can be.
I'm curious, do you allow for customization? And if so, how do you do that to avoid like scope creep, or how do you do it so you can stick to your schedule so it doesn't get out of whack? Because this feels like something that could be creative beyond just, hey, this is the exact one we do over and over again. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes. So we have quickly fine-tuned the process to learn where customizations is not possible.
Yeah.
And so what we now advertise is modifications and upgrades.
Mm.
The modifications and upgrades that we offer are accessories, similar to when you buy a new car. You don't get to go and pick the shape of the steering wheel, but you can buy a steering wheel cover.
Yeah.
You don't get to choose the shape of your floor mats, but you can choose a floor mat color. So we kind of piggybacked off that. And so you can upgrade your compressor instead of a, you know, a 1 liter, you can get a 2 liter compressor, something mm-hmm. that doesn't involve the production process as well, but something can be done after the fact and or shipped directly to the customer and the customer install.
It sounds like you're borrowing a lot of best practices from the automotive industry in general, where they've done that all the time, where there are upgrades, there are modifications, but it's not you adjusting your process in a way that wouldn't be sustainable or would impact the orders for other customers.
Exactly.
Well.
The automotive industry has designed and fine-tuned the wheel. I always tell my team, there's only so perfect of a circle you can draw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the wheel can only be so much of a circle. And so there's no sense in reinventing the wheel. We got to get creative and first benchmark from the automotive industry and get up to speed with them. And then we can be even more creative and fine tune off of that. But at the end of the day, the wheel's already been invented.
Another topic that came up before you walked into the room, and I didn't necessarily prepare you for this one, but is your focus around user experience that goes into these vans. And there are things that maybe to the untrained eye, you wouldn't think about. But when it comes to running water lines, I think was the example that was given, you have a way to make this more ideal for your customers. Tell me how user experience plays into your
Yes. Device. So user experience is key for us. That's why we started this journey. There's mm-hmm. 117 expedition vehicle van builders out there just in the United States alone today.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's kind of doing the same thing. But for us, we're like, at the end of the day, it's not the manufacturer using this, it's the user. And mm-hmm. so we took real-time feedback from our consumers, real-time feedback from online forums of all our competitors. We AI put that all into a list of 12 problems. And if you do your research, you know, a year ago, it'd take you, you know, months and months of probably master level or at least bachelor level college students to do all this research. Today, you can plug this into AI and it'll give you a list. We got a list of 12 problems. And one of them was the way electrical and plumbing is ran.
Mm-hmm.
And so our plumbing system is so simple that a 27-year-old consumer in the middle of the Mexican desert can replace a fresh water gauge, can replace a fuse, can replace a piece of piping. You don't have to go to a service center and tear apart half of your RV to replace a water filter or a water pump.
So we just got into the details of what goes into one of your vans and what I'd call a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that you're not really dealing with until you need to do an upgrade, fix an issue, etc. Let's just talk about what the coolest parts about your vans are. When someone asks you, it's like, hey, describe one of your vans to me. What is one of the aspects of it that you love to tell people about?
I have to be kind of biased towards what I like, and that's
sure.
the exterior modifications.
Yeah.
Also what we call mods.
Yeah.
And so the mods that we have on our vans are top notch. A lot of our competition, when you buy their van, you have to go spend 50, 60, sometimes 100,000 modifying. And that's just mm-hmm. in parts cost. We do all that for you out front, and
sure.
our van costs the same amount. So we rebuild your suspension. We put wheels and tires, mm-hmm. wheels that are certified by Mercedes so you don't have tire pressure sensor problems, tires that are all terrain so you can actually hit the gravel, hit the slopes, you know, be driving through some mud, some branches. And so on the exterior, when you look at it, it looks like a Jeep, you know, the off-road Jeeps. And that was probably my key factors, the exterior mods, not only the functionality, but the appearance of it.
Yeah, no, they're very cool. If anyone gets a chance, check out the 27 North website. You can get a taste for all that right there. I'm going to switch gears a little bit in this conversation because there's something, and I mentioned this right at the start, you share your story very well on an ongoing basis. And it's not always about the vans. It's about your life and your experience building the business. And one of the areas that always sticks out is you've been very public about telling your story. Hey, when I started this business, I was living with my in-laws. And now I believe you're about to open up a brand new facility. Your growth has been massive. So I'm curious, what was your vision or your dream for this company when it was just starting out? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, most definitely. early on, from even before when I started, I always knew that I wanted to make a big impact on society itself. And I noticed from just the circle of people that I grew up with, it was really diverse. We had lower income families. We had middle class. I went to a high school where I got to, sit in class with the kids of judges and lawyers and doctors. And then next, a few seats down was me on food stamps. And a few seats down was a couple of exchange students that were living in a mobile home. And so we had literally, I would say, all of the demographics from trailer park to multimillion dollar mansions. And I saw just a diverse range of lifestyles. And I noticed whether you take the individuals that were living in the trailer park, two families and one mobile home, to the individual in the mansion, across the board, there is a false kind of impression or a stereotype of life and entrepreneurship, running a business, being successful. Across the board, people thought success was a fancy car and a big home. Across the board, people thought life was easy. There's no challenges. And whether you take it from a business perspective or a personal perspective, I didn't see much difference other than a false impression. I think in part it was social media. I think Hollywood played a role in that. And at the end of the day, I wanted to portray to people that you can still live a nice, happy life overcoming day-to-day challenges. And that's why I am so vocal about the challenges in my life, how I overcome them and how I make the best of them, to give people an accurate representation of what it's like to run a manufacturing facility, what it's like to be married, what it's like to be strong in your faith, what it's like to pursue new journeys, what it's like to take risks, to look at life the way it is and not this false perception that society portrays it as today.
And I like the real nature that comes out of your content and the real nature that came out in that answer as well. So let's package this up then. Like, if we were to give advice to the manufacturing leaders out there that are listening, what advice would you give them if they were just starting out as well?
Yeah, great question. I recently had an individual reach out within the manufacturing industry. They manufacture a lot of heavy duty products, and they are stuck at 20 million revenue a year, and they really want to reach their goal of 100 million. And they feel like they can't grow and they can't scale. And after a short conversation, I came to the realization that they, along with many other people, have the same problem. They surround themselves with the wrong people. So you have a lot of entrepreneurs starting in the manufacturing industry. They want to be the next Elon Musk. Then you have individuals that are already somewhat successful, and they surround themselves with less successful people. And so now you got yourself with either the wrong crowd or the wrong crowd on the other side in regards to they're too successful or not successful. You have to find people in your niche. So if you want to scale your company from 20 million to 100 million, find $100 million companies.
Yeah.
Forget Elon Musk.
Yeah. Find people that are the next step of where you want to be in your journey.
Exactly. Forget Elon Musk. Forget Toyota. Like, don't even be worried about their marketing. Don't try to do what they're doing. Find a $100 million a year company. I like to tell, especially new individuals that are going, transitioning from their garage to their first factory, they're out there trying to create content the way Apple creates content. They're out there trying to buy machinery and steel presses that Toyota and Tesla. You don't need that. Find that next step in your life. Benchmark with it. Once you get near or to their level and you want to keep growing, take the next step. Find another company to benchmark with. Forget Toyota. Find a company that's nearest to you or nearest to the next step that you want to take and benchmark from them.
It's funny when I talk to people about mentorship, because I feel like that's a term we often use very vaguely. I tell people, it's like, look for two types of people. Look for someone that kind of embodies a lot of the different things you want to be someday. Or look for someone that is really good at a skill you want to develop and build your mentor relationship around that skill. Exactly. And I see a lot of parallels between what you're saying. Look for someone who is at that next step in the journey where you're trying to get to and work with them, surround yourself with them.
Exactly. That's the first thing I did before I even started making plans of building a manufacturing facility. I reached out to the Missouri Association of Manufacturers, Andrew, Michael, wonderful resources. And I said, hey, I need manufacturers.
Yeah.
What kind of manufacturers? I need X amount of million a year manufacturers. They introduced me to seven wonderful companies.
Yeah.
I immediately reached out to all seven CEOs. I drafted them an email that's copy and paste other than the different, you know, name who's addressed to. I said, I want to get to where you guys are.
Yeah.
One taught me all about accounting. Another taught me all about legal. The legal aspect. I mean, it's overwhelming how much you have to cover your grounds in regards to just legal. He walked me through. He's like, Paul, I'm going to save you $50 million worth of lawsuits. That's how much we've learned over the last 60 years. I'm like, wonderful.
Yeah.
One email saved me $50 million worth of headaches. And he gave me copies of his contracts, copies of everything he learned.
Mm-hmm.
Just one email. Just make that introduction. Go say hi to that person, you know, just piggybacking off what you said.
I love the specifics you're sharing here. It's funny. One of my next questions is going to be, you know, what does an association like the Missouri Association of Manufacturers, what can that do for someone like you? And you already answered that question, yeah, right? Like literally reaching out to seven people that, like you were just talking about, were at that next stage in the journey you wanted to get to, and they taught you lessons in their unique area of expertise, whether that was an accounting lesson, whether that was a legal lesson.
Yeah.
Excellent advice there. My last question for this conversation is, you know, we're here at the Midwest Manufacturers Trade Show and Conference, and you have a unique situation because you're based not too far from here in Springfield, Missouri. So I'm just kind of getting a little survey here. What would you say the manufacturing scene, the manufacturing community is like in Springfield, Missouri? And feel free to expand beyond that as well.
I think it's the manufacturing hub of the world.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any better place in the world to be manufacturing than the Midwest, more specifically Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Springfield, you got the stainless steel capital of the world. You go 40 miles from here, Joplin. It's the trailer and boat manufacturer of the world. So you have an overwhelming amount of resources, 6,000 plus manufacturers. You have associations like MAM, so Missouri Association of Manufacturers. You need legal help, reach out. You don't need to go Google, because what happens when you Google? A lot of times you get these national companies, you call a 1-800 number, and you spend a ton of money not to get the outcome that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Through organizations like MAM, you contact, say, hey, I need someone within politics to help us figure out, you know, a land dispute or how to get credits. They'll connect you to the lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
They'll connect you to a director of business development, a person like a 417 area code, not a 1-800, a local area code. You can get someone on the phone today and get an answer today of what you need to do.
I appreciate all the specifics you brought to this conversation. I'm looking forward to continuing to follow your journey, the journey of 27 North. And in the show notes, I'll make sure you have spots to link up with Pavel and everyone, everything else we talked about in this conversation. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Cheers.
We'll be right back right after a word from our sponsor. Build control panels? Do you want to reduce your overall project time by 59%? Then you should check out ePlan, because that's exactly what Automated Drive Systems, ADS, did when they partnered up with them. ePlan is helping companies like ADS create standardized processes for more efficient engineering. That's because ePlan is more than your typical CAD software and is ideal for creating electrical schematics and panel layouts. When ADS needed to become a leaner operation, ePlan standardized their creation of electrical schematics and panel layouts, and the data from ePlan fed directly back to equipment that automates both panel wiring and enclosure modification. It even creates 3D digital twins of panels so you can visualize the configuration and design before building the real thing. So, if you're building panels and you too are trying to run lean while reducing your design and build times like ADS did, then go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/eplan to learn more. And while you're at it, don't miss episode 132 featuring our full-length interview with their well-traveled solutions architect, Sean Mulheron. He's got some good stories, but for now, it's time to get back to today's episode.
All right, standard operating procedures, a handful of screws versus 50 screws. And something more simple as taking some photos with your guest when you record a podcast. Some great tips in that interview from Pavel. Plus, as you probably gathered, he's got a very cool story. Again, he's very good about consistently sharing what he's up to and telling his story on a regular basis on social media. As you know, you can connect with Pavel and all the guests from this episode by visiting the show notes page at manufacturinghappyhour.com/180. Next up, we've got Josh Shelton from Escht. So let's get right into it and hear his story as well.
All right, man, let's do this.
Let's do it. Sounds good.
Josh, yeah. Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So I looked at your background before this conversation, and you own Escht, a nameplate company, the nameplate company, I should say.
Yep.
But you worked for a nameplate company long before this.
I did.
So give us a bit of a story. What inspired you to own your own nameplate company after starting, I think, for a decade with the same organization, if I remember right?
Right. Well, I can tell you right now that I didn't grow up, you know, one day hoping to become a business owner of a nameplate manufacturing company.
But yeah, that's fair.
But I did. I worked for a company that was manufacturing similar products for a long time, you know. And, you know, to be completely honest with you, after that, into that 10-year run there, it was a good run. They fired me. They let me go. So, you know, gut punch. But, you know, you reset that time, right, in your life. But no, I went off and did some work on my own and for another company manufacturing other products, connectors, actually high reliable connectors. And I was traveling all the time, you know, had a couple of young kids at home, wife at home, gone a lot. Yeah, you know, making that sacrifice, right, that we all do as we're trying to build a career. And I had a colleague of mine that I would call once in a while and say, hey, where are you at? You know, where are you at this week, Adam? And Adam actually happens to be my business partner currently.
Okay. Oh, okay.
But yeah.
All right.
But he was doing the same thing. He was traveling and had young kids at home. And so we sometimes would just reconnect. And, you know, one day I called Adam and I said, hey, Adam, where are you at this week? He said, well, I'm right now at Houston Hobby Airport. And I'm at Houston Hobby Airport. Well, let's grab a beer and
awesome.
Chat a little bit, right? So we did. We talked, and you know, it kind of boiled down to the fact that, you know, that at that stage in my life, I was ready to do something on my own. I feel like I had enough experience to do that. I was already making sacrifices away from my family, and I thought, hey, if I'm going to do this, you know, now is the time for one, and two, it feels like if I'm going to sacrifice, let's make a sacrifice for myself and my family, and let's go try this thing. So, you know, really the point there and reason starting a nameplate manufacturing company was because we knew we were going to reinvent the widget, but we definitely felt like there were some things out there in the market that we could kind of do better than other folks and take care of customers in ways that maybe other people weren't. And we wanted to see if we could make that work and make it happen. And we went off and did that. So
I've had three new questions pop up just in the course of that first answer.
Yeah.
So how did you pick yourself up after you got let go of working at a company for 10 years?
Yeah.
And what lessons have you taken with you now to help you manage your career?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously initially, so I tend to be a person that really just dives all in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for me at the time, that point in my career, I was all in, you know, and to get that, you know, that pink slip, if you will, like that was definitely a gut punch, an ego check kind of, right? But, you know, I don't know. I mean, my parents and I have a twin brother, so we were super close, you know, obviously growing up, and we pushed each other and challenged each other and stuff. And so it was one of these things that for me, I knew I couldn't, it wasn't in me to just stay down, right? To stay down. And I had responsibilities at home to take care of my kids, my family and everything as well. But then at the same time, I think it was, you know, people say this and sometimes it sounds cliche, but you know, maybe it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've obviously been on this journey with Escht now for, you know, since 2017, and this has been so much fun, you know, and kind of every challenge that you wanted to have as a professional and a business person, we faced it through COVID from a startup through COVID to kind of where we're at now, some of the challenges and excitement that we have going on now. You know, I knew, you know, the only path forward was a positive path forward.
Yeah.
Me. Yep.
I like that vibe. Now, the next question is, aside from Adam being in the right place, the right time at Houston Hobby Airport, what makes him the right co-founder for your business? What are the different things you bring to the table?
So Adam would say he's a realist.
Okay.
And I'm a dreamer.
All right.
So, you know, you kind of start to figure out what I mean there. You know, when I feel like I'm good at is really getting excited about the future and having a future vision and where we want to go. And he's very good at, you know, executing today and executing on that vision. And he's just a great guy too. I mean, he's just a great person and great leader. And he's always had an operations background. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he was, you know, plant manager, director of operations, very much in the manufacturing, like making it happen type of roles for his career. Mm-hmm. I had a sales background for the most part. And so, those two things kind of all made for a great partnership, really, you know, and we do work well together. Sometimes you don't know how well you're going to work together until you start a business together like that and go through some of the trials and tribulations, but it's been a great ride. So,
yeah. Yep.
So, and then my brother, I have a twin brother, like I mentioned, Justin, mm-hmm. he's a business partner of ours as well.
Oh, cool.
And we're staying as well. So, you know, we knew that we couldn't do it on our own.
Like, yeah.
All by ourselves. You know, when we started in 2017, we had zero customers, zero sales, mm-hmm. no equipment. You know, and
so you started this company. You didn't buy it. You starting it from the ground up. Okay.
No, no, this was from zero. Yeah, this was from zero. Yeah. So yeah, wild.
Yeah. No. I mean, I like asking that question because oftentimes I do feel like the answer is, hey, there's an individual that's the dreamer, the vision person, and another individual that's the operations person, the executor. I love hearing about that balance.
Yep.
And it certainly seems that you both have that.
Yeah, it's been great.
So the other question, the final question that came up during that first initial response was, what is it that Etched does better than the rest of the market? Actually, the way I want to ask this question is, you know, for manufacturing folks out there that are like, oh, well, there are already a bunch of people doing this.
Yeah.
What are the things that you looked for to say, like, sure, there are already players in this space, but we see an opportunity where there's space for us too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a lot of companies in our industry that they do a really, really good job of making metal tags. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great quality. They're going to execute, you know, lead times and things like that. They do a great job with that. But what I've kind of started to realize and what we knew out there was that the tags are in this kind of category of product for our customers that, you know, they're not that expensive. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're not throw away items by any stretch, but they're not as important as maybe like some raw material that's your bulk of your spend. So they don't get paid attention to that closely by our customers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it can shut down a line. Okay. So
how can it shut down a line?
Our customers typically have to have a tag on their product before it ships out. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this tag would include information like, you know, obviously the manufacturer's name and contact information, but like a serial number, mm-hmm. test data, potentially a warning that maybe they're into their specific industry forces them to have on the mm-hmm. equipment. It has to have kind of the full bill of materials before it goes out the door, including this. Okay. This isn't strictly just a kind of a hang on throwaway tag or even just a logo, right? This is
information that's critical.
It's got to be on there. Yep. It's got to be on there. And you can't just go to Home Depot or Lowe's or something like that and buy them either. Sure. Right. So when they're out, we know that's it can be a huge problem for them. And we really wanted to tackle that problem that people had with managing these types of products, specifically nameplates within their manufacturing facility, managing the inventory levels, reorder points, and just making it easier for them to manage their tags than they were currently, you know, experiencing. So, you know, we knew that a lot of our competition sometimes would react to those situations, meaning an expedite or an expedite fee and those sorts of things. And what we really wanted to do was go in there and try to solve that problem for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure this doesn't happen again. Yeah, you know, we live and breathe metal tags. You don't, you know, you're doing other things, and we want to be able to go in there and kind of find a way to see if there's a way that we can help you so you don't have that same experience again. And if you do, we obviously have things in place to help them with that as well. So, yep.
So a couple more questions as we go through this. I'm interested to shift gears to understand a bit about the manufacturing community, the manufacturing scene, where you're based in Kansas City, but beyond that as well, to the state of Missouri and the greater Midwest. Tell us a little bit about that, what it's like being a part of that community.
So, yeah, you know, Kansas City specifically is a very diverse economy and diverse manufacturing base. And, you know, there's obviously kind of a wide range of industries that are supported there. But, you know, I think that they, you know, I think Kansas City and specifically Kansas City does a good job trying to connect with students, right? Even high school, kind of building out those programs where we're connecting with students and thinking about career paths. That's exciting for me. And then in general, in Missouri and what Michael's done here with Missouri Association of Manufacturers, him and his team have done a phenomenal job of connecting manufacturers in Missouri. You know, I think in the Midwest, we are a little bit more spread out, right? We have kind of population centers or manufacturing spread out a bit. And organizations like what Michael's put together here is critical. Now, I have to tell you, the first experience that I had with this group here was at this show a year ago. And, you know, I came away from here just inspired and excited. And, you know, I think that when you get to be a part of a community that they're all fighting the same fight and with people that are willing to help each other out, it's pretty powerful and pretty amazing thing. And I really feel that here. And Michael and his team do a great job of connecting the dots for all of us together, where we might not see each other more than once or twice a year, but we still feel connected in the same community. And I reach out to people within the organization if I have questions or need some help. And that's just an invaluable resource, obviously, that we have here with Missouri Association of Manufacturers.
It's funny, that's come up unprompted in both of our conversations so far, especially around how they connect the manufacturing community in this space. So I've got one last question for you.
Okay.
And that's around, you mentioned you're the dreamer. You're the vision guy at Etched. So what is the dream? What is the vision for Etched? Where are you now? Where do you see it going?
Yeah. So we've got a long ways to go, and we're in this thing for the long haul. But you know, for me, and I know our team, we get energy from solving problems. And I mean that. Like I've you know, learned that we love that. And so, you know, one of the things that we're really, really focused on is continuing to bring solutions to our customers. And we need to be keep an open mind about that. That could be specifically with metal nameplates. It could be with something else possibly as well. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we've done when COVID hit, you know, we had to kind of pivot on how our growth strategy, what that looked like. You know, before COVID, we were able to go out and see our customers and go visit, right, a lot. Well, we couldn't do that during COVID, right? So, you know, we acquired a company in 2020, and then we've actually gone through and we've done an acquisition every year since. And so with that, it's what that's brought to us is excitement and energy, new capabilities, new talented people. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue to do that as well. The main goal for us is that we want to make sure that we're always staying focused on making sure this is a great place to be, place to work. I'm a team person. I've always been kind of team centered, and I think that the sum of the parts are greater, the greater than the whole. So we're going to continue to build on the strengths of our team and continue to innovate, get better every single day, and continue to bring value to the market. That's our whole goal.
I lied. I have another question.
Let's head
another one. Another one popped up.
But I'm here, man. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, you've acquired a new company every year since 2020.
Yeah.
What do you look for in the companies that you acquire to have the confidence that they're going to be a fit for your culture, that they're going to take you to where you want Etched to go?
Well, you don't know me very well, but I think that, you know, maybe someday you'll know me better.
Yeah.
I like to...
This is a pretty good intro.
I feel like I want to be, you know, a really genuine person, right? And I think that even our customers, I can kind of tell, and they can probably tell if we're going to work together pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so the acquisitions that we've been able to get done have all been, you know, companies that where the owner was looking for a retirement, way to retire, didn't have an exit strategy, but could kind of believe in our vision for what that might look like for their company. I mean, this is their baby. There's a lot of trust. There's a lot of kind of who's going to carry this legacy on for me. And, you know, when we've been able to go in, and so there's just a lot of conversation like that, like we're having now, you know, it's not a checklist and I don't have a suit and tie on. I mean, we're just in there talking to fellow business owners about what their vision is for the next phase for them and what we're trying to get accomplished. And if those things can line up, then we're usually able to find a way to make that work. And that's really what it's boiled down to for us.
Sounds like you could start a podcast that comes out once a year of your conversation with a business owner you're buying the company.
It's been so fun. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so rewarding, and like each one of the people that we've been able to kind of help transition are all willing.
Yeah,
they're all willing to say, hey, you know, if I need a reference or something for some, they would do it. And I think really, as much as anything else, it's a testament to the guy that you know, Adam, Mark, Justin, and I, and what we're trying to do. I think just a good team and good people, and that's what we're trying to surround ourselves with as much as possible. And you know, when we find a fellow business owner who's kind of like that, sometimes it just makes sense. You know, we just figure out that it makes sense for us all. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to jump on the show today, Josh. Yeah. Thanks so much for the initial intro to your organization and for sharing a bunch of lessons with the audience today.
Thank you for having me. Enjoy the show. It's going to be a great show, and you know, hopefully you get to see what Missouri is all about here.
Oh yeah. Yeah, by the time this comes out, I'll have gotten a good taste of it, but I've been wanting to come to this one for a while.
Good.
So it's good to be back in Missouri.
Sounds good. Great. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Next round of our interviews coming up right after a word from our sponsor.
Gray Solutions is a systems integrator that you've probably heard me talk about on this show before. Maybe you heard our interview with their CEO, Walker Maddox, or maybe you've heard us talk about how the term systems integrator isn't even a term that fully encompasses who they are. Well, that's what I'm here to talk about. Of everything that Gray Solutions does, they are ahead of their time when it comes to helping manufacturers commission new facilities and new lines with confidence. That's because their 3D modeling capabilities are basically like having a crystal ball. If you want to peer into the future of your facility or process upgrade long before you invest, well, then you should definitely check out episode 171, where we interview Gray Solutions VP of Cool Stuff, Greg Powers. Yes, that's his actual title. That's where you'll hear about their unique approach to 3D modeling. While every other company is throwing the term artificial intelligence around with no context, you'll hear how Gray Solutions is using it to provide hyper-accurate 3D models that help manufacturers revolutionize their business. ManufacturingHappyHour.com/171 will take you right there. So hey, commission with confidence. Pick a partner with a proven track record of project success that's always investing in new, innovative ways to get your projects done faster and better. Check out Gray Solutions on this podcast or at graysolutions.com. And now back to today's episode.
Okay, so we've been through Springfield, now Kansas City. The next stop in our tour of Missouri manufacturing is St. Louis. This is the last interview in this set, and it's a strong closer. Kevin Thompson spent a long time at Cambridge Air Solutions as their CFO, and he very recently jumped into the role of a leadership coach for the company. We recorded this one right at the beginning of the kickoff party for the Midwest Manufacturers Trade Show and Conference, and we actually had a drink in hand for this one. So feel free to grab a drink and join us in this conversation. Kevin, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm good. This is the first proper happy hour edition during this compilation we're doing here at the Midwest Manufacturers Trade Show and Conference. So I should preface this since I do have a drink in front of you. This is what is called a moonshine margarita. I bring it up because Missouri Ridge Distilling is the company that's based here that's providing the beverages. I'm only like a couple sips in. I have to say, I think moonshine margarita is the perfect way to describe it because you can already get a sense for it after a couple sips. So I'm glad we're doing this interview early during the party. But I want to dive right in because I've been hearing more and more about Cambridge Air Solutions, which I think is pretty unique for what I'd say is, let's say, a more mid-sized name in the manufacturing world. And you can correct me on that and say, no, we're huge, because I think you're nationwide in terms of the work you do.
We are North America, but we are not large in size in the sense of employees or that you would traditionally think is large. I call us kind of smaller into middle market.
But I think that checks out to me. I think where I'm going with this is you're making a lot of
big impact.
Good noise, big impact. Despite your size, which I think is very cool.
We like to say we punch larger than we are. That's our attempt.
Excellent way to describe it. And I think that probably ties into your mission as well. So you're in the business of enriching lives, I want you to tell me what that means, both from a literal standpoint and then from, let's say, maybe the deeper meaning behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it originates in work we did as a leadership team probably like 12 years ago, and it out of The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni, mm-hmm. Where he says you answer six questions. You got to answer these first before you do anything else. And the first two of the questions are, why do you exist and how do you behave? Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have that dialed in well. So in our why we exist statement, what we ended up with was this very strong emphasis on enriching lives. It was mm-hmm. our owner's desire. We're second generation, 60-year-old family company. And that's his heart. It's his family's heart. And so that's where it originates. So we exist to glorify God by enriching the quality of every life we touch. And we really do focus the enriching. Mm-hmm. And so for us, enriching, so if you think about what enriching is, it's you take something and you add something to it to make it better, mm-hmm. right? Fertilizer for soil would be enriching the soil. And so our goal actually is, if you think about our why statement, we don't exist to make HVAC equipment. We exist to enrich lives. We happen to enrich lives by making, distributing HVAC equipment. We mm-hmm. could do it other ways. Mm-hmm. And so when our employees are inside that why, when all of us are inside that why, it's a different manufacturing life than, oh yeah, I make heaters every day.
Yeah.
I tell you as a leader, it's a different leadership life.
I mean, when you're making cooling equipment and you're based in St. Louis, I mean, that's a life enrichener. I've had to deal with those summers. Well, every time I visit back during the summer as well, I still feel it. So, no, I appreciate the deeper meaning and the literal meaning behind it. And I think the biggest buzz I hear about Cambridge Air Solutions is around the culture that you have there.
Yep.
And one of the most tangible ways that I think characterizes your unique culture that I've heard about on podcasts and I've started to hear more chatter about the industry is your morning meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your morning meetings, because, well, I'm not going to say any more on that. I want to hear from you, and then I'll go into maybe other questions I have.
Yeah, so the morning meeting's been going on now without interruption, including when we did a quick pivot during COVID to remote for a little while, for like 11 years, I think, or 10, mm-hmm. maybe not quite that long, 10. It is a daily touch, all employees, all locations. It's intended to last about 15 minutes. I call it more of a cultural touch. It's mm-hmm. not the huddle like most people would think, where you're transferring a whole bunch of information. It is that. It has that in it. But it's led by a volunteer. So about half of our employees volunteer. One of our core values is courage, and value and action statement for us is grab the mic. So for somebody to grab that mic and lead a morning meeting takes courage. So that's mm-hmm. one of our values. And so that volunteer gets up and they lead us for about 5 minutes in stretching, and they can talk about anything they want to talk about during that 5 minutes.
Yeah.
They can make any slide they want to slide. So we get a lot, make the slide they want to make. So we get a lot of family pictures. We get a lot of, what do I do for hobbies? It's everything under the sun. I did one morning meeting where I said all my favorite music that got me through high school.
That's a great topic.
Yeah. And people got to know me better. So the whole concept is, and then we do a whole lot of information training, but the whole topic is, or the whole concept is, we break down those barriers where at work we don't see each other as humans. And so you might see me as Kevin, the CFO, when I was the CFO, instead of Kevin as the person who's a father of 7 children and the grandfather of 8 grandchildren and mm-hmm. likes to do woodworking and read. And it breaks those down, right? And so it's something that's just totally organic for us right now. If we tried to stop, the employees wouldn't let us.
Sure.
They wouldn't let us. It started out catastrophically bad. I will just tell you that when we first did it, it was horrible. I didn't want to be there. It was blame. It was all kinds of unhealthy stuff. And we just kept working at it. We had some leaders who were super committed to doing it well. We had examples of other people doing it well, friends in the industry mm-hmm. and in different industries. And it took about 6 months before we dialed it in. And we hold it on the plant floor, standing up. Everybody's out there. If you're not out there, you're online.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my favorite part of the day. Absolute favorite part of the day.
So a couple questions. You mentioned there's stretching going on as well. So like kind of like a warm up for
Stretch would be a stretch.
Okay. All right.
It's more quick warm up stuff. Yeah. Our employees go to work. Our hourly guys on the floor go to work at 5. So they've already been at work for almost 3 hours.
They're already in the zone.
They're warmed up.
Yeah. Well, my next question obviously has to be, what are the top 3 albums, bands, or like songs that got you through high school?
Dang.
You can't go there and not expect that question.
Yeah. So I'm going to go albums. I'm going to go Eagles Hotel California, Supertramp Live at Budokan, Cheap Trick Live at Budokan, and probably Supertramp Breakfast in America. Those would be my three top that got me through kind of that. And it was about, my dad died when I was a senior, so there was stuff to get through when I was in high school. So
yeah,
those are big for me.
You'll appreciate this. I just saw Cheap Trick a week and a half.
No, actually, jealous.
You'll get a kick out of this. The minor league hockey team in Milwaukee has concerts on the ice, like maybe four or five times throughout the season after the game. And these artists are no slouch. They had, and you're literally just paying for the price of a hockey ticket. You get a free concert.
Yeah.
So got to see a minor league hockey game, which is great because they're a little scrappier there in the minor league. So there's always some action. And then Cheap Trick comes out and plays a full hour long concert after that.
I saw this. Doobie Brothers like that at an NFL game.
Yeah. Very cool. My next question then, because I want to learn from you a bit, and I think our audience will want to learn from you a bit too. When you're going through something that's a bit of a cultural transformation, like getting the morning meeting to stick, you mentioned you didn't want to be there like at that time.
Yeah.
What did you have to, like, tell, what were those 6 months like? What did it take to get something like that to stick that everyone else can learn from for their businesses as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of our old leaders who's no longer with us called it the vortex. So you kind of spin up the vortex. So what we started with was actually, this is going to sound really funny to your audience. One of the things that we started with that was a key cultural change was that we decided to clean our own building and clean our own bathrooms.
Hmm.
And so we had some people excited that came back from a visit and they said, we're going to clean the bathrooms. Everybody's going to clean the bathrooms. We said, well, time out. How about you clean, you know, the four of you do it and we do it with you as a leadership team. And then everybody will see us do it and they'll want to join. And so we got a core group of people passionate, maybe eight people. And then it became 12 and then it became 24. And then we started just making intentional small changes, just little small improvements that we say run the experiment.
Yeah.
And that's why I said about 6 months of that got us to the point where it's like, yeah, I think, you know, people started wanting to be there. They saw it. We do gratitude as a huge part of the morning meeting.
Yeah.
Like people just grab the mic and say, what are you grateful for that day? It can be anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be work related. But 80% of it's thankful for a coworker and something they did, right?
Oh, that's great. I mean, I'm a gratitude journal guy as well.
There you go. Like a gratitude journal.
Great way to start the day.
Probably one of the biggest impacts me personally with Cambridge has been the focus on gratitude in the time that I've been there. Just learning that as a person. That just being surrounded by people that do like you do, they gratitude journal. And I'm not that guy generally, so.
Yeah. Oh, it's very cool that an activity like that you said started 12 years ago.
I may be a little long because I've lost track of time, but it's 8 to 10.
Yeah, it's
a long time.
It's been going on for a while, and other people can attend that, right? Like,
we have visitors all the time.
Yeah.
Like open invitation. Anybody, just call us. We'll get you in. And we do tours, too, that are actually formal. You can sign up for. I think we do 4 of those a year or something where you can see our operation. So
we're going to switch gears here in a second, but what is your final tip for the leaders out there about creating the culture they want in their company?
Yeah.
I know it's kind of a vague
question, it's okay. It's a hard one. And I've gotten to the point, I was sharing with somebody recently that I've almost gotten to the point where I don't use the word culture because I can't define it. But
yeah.
So I define culture as values in action.
Mm-hmm.
And so my answer would be those first two Lencioni questions out of the advantages. Know your why, live it every day, encourage your employees to live it every day. Your why is your why. It's not ours. You know, they're all different, right? But know it and be passionate about it and build your business around it. And then the how do you behave statement, which is what are your core values? For us, they're unconditional love, care, courage, and respect. And you have to live those out every day. And so that's our culture, is us attempting to live those values out every single day, showing unconditional love for one another, which is simply, I love you for who you are, not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But I do expect you to do what you're hired to do.
Yeah.
Right? That's care, courage, and respect.
Yeah.
And so I think know those two things, just know they're the foundation of everything else. Everything else will probably stall at some point if you don't have those two things dialed in that everybody can rally around as a team.
Well, I think great conversation. I love this kind of fresh approach in the manufacturing industry in a lot of ways. Culture, values in action makes a lot of sense. Another area I want to ask you about is you have manufacturing ambassadors.
We do.
Correct?
Yeah,
What does a manufacturing ambassador do?
So a manufacturing ambassador is inside our revenue team. And
okay.
So we serve a lot of, obviously, communities in the business world. Our primary is warehouse distribution. but we also serve the manufacturing space heavily for heating, cooling, and ventilation. And so it's a unique space with unique requirements. And so for us, what we decided to do is we're going to have these people that are full-time. They're not like the commission comp isn't real high because we know they're actually not out selling. They're out building relationship with the manufacturing community. Mm-hmm. They're actually out there to enrich the manufacturing community and listen and bring back for us what does that community need when it comes to our products and services specifically.
What type of feedback then are you hearing from the manufacturing world right now?
It's difficult. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the sector.
Yeah.
You know, some are hot and going great, and some are slowing down and getting a little bit softer. And I'm not as connected now because, you know, I've changed roles. We've talked about it a little bit. And yeah. So I'm not as deeply connected as I was to the markets. But I would say overall, if you made me generalize, I would just say there's kind of caution. There's encouragement about onshoring and stuff that's going on in the world. It mm-hmm. seems to be bringing manufacturing back to at least North America, if not the U.S. We're seeing good movement in that area. We're still seeing strength in the warehouse distribution market. But, you know, people are still cautious. It's an election year. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot going on that we've all experienced in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, you think you know what's going on and you like wake up one morning and you're like, I didn't see that one.
Massive curve.
I didn't see that one coming. Yeah.
I like that you have a team of folks that are out there that are meant to be listening to what's going on.
Yeah, for sure.
And you mentioned your new role. We talked about it off camera and off the mic, but I do want to ask you about it. So you, correct me if I'm wrong, you used to be the CFO.
Yep.
And now your focus is on like a mentorship role within the organization. How do you define your role today?
Yeah.
You're having a drink with someone. Right?
So my title is leadership coach. I have 35 years with several companies, including Cambridge and COO and CFO, GM roles. And especially at Cambridge and with all the work we've done, my heart has turned so much toward leadership development and coaching and mentoring that I finally, about a year and a half ago, I went and said, hey, I think I'm ready to start transitioning a new season. I want to do this part time, mm-hmm. kind of figure out what that whole quote unquote retirement thing looks like. And I would love to do that in a coaching capacity because I think we need it. We've been planning on it and hadn't funded or staffed it. And they were like, mm-hmm. Yeah, who better to do it? Like, you know us pretty well.
Yeah.
So I'm actually in a part-time capacity now as a leadership coach. So I'm helping I'm inside our HR team now.
Okay.
Off our leadership team. And I'm helping develop our standard work and our process around leadership development. We already have some in place. So I'll be like instructing with that. And then I do a little outside coaching as well. I've an outside client relationship, and I do a little bit of mentoring and some work in the not-for-profit world. But my heart's in coaching and mentoring. I love it. I just love it.
And how long have you been in this role now?
This role, not very long. I took a 3-month sabbatical in the fall, and I came back in January. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is brand
new. It's pretty new. Okay. I mean, I've been doing it in my other role, you know, in my other capacity as CFO, a leader there, but officially in that capacity with that business card.
What impact then do you expect or hope that this role accomplishes?
Yeah, that's a great question. The goal is actually, I think all good leadership roles are to work yourself out of a job. Mm. And so my goal in the next 3 years, which is kind of my seasonal perspective right now, it could change, is the people that I get involved with coaching, I want them to be comfortable becoming coaches. And I'm using a specific methodology that I certified in. There's others, but the one I'm using that I'm bringing in, I want them to be able to do the very same thing and be comfortable as coaches. And coaches development, you know, is developing your players, right? And so coaching to make coaches is my hope.
It's become a theme on the podcast lately about talking about working yourself out of.
Oh, has it really?
Yeah, it's been another, like, I'm set, like, and it's not just in terms of a leadership context.
Yeah, everybody should do it. Yeah.
Like, especially engineers have been talking about that too, or manufacturing managers.
It's a total paradox because if you do it, you don't. Mm-hmm. If you do it, you don't. You don't actually work. You have more opportunity. It's just a weird paradox.
I think, a powerful thing when you're able to have the confidence. You mentioned, we were talking about that earlier, to adopt that type of mentality.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to finish on a little bit of a lighter note. I want to ask you, and I've been asking everyone this, like, what characterizes the manufacturing scene, manufacturing community in the respective cities where you're based and the broader Missouri community, Midwest community? tell us what the manufacturing scene is like in St. Louis, Missouri.
You know, it's interesting. It's changed a lot. I mean, I would say if you go back to like 1990, probably the 20 years or so after 1990, pretty significant decline. We lost a lot of large manufacturers or larger manufacturers that mm-hmm. declined in size or split operations up. And so a large decline in that 20 years. And I think since 2010, there's been a pretty solid, slow, sustained recovery. And I think you're seeing it in a broader set of sectors, biomedical, you know, healthcare services. I think we underestimate the smaller, privately held 50 to 250 employees. They're the big part of the manufacturing world. We see that in what we sell, you know, the 50 to 250,000 square foot buildings with 300 employees. I think they're the backbone of manufacturing. Now you're seeing more and more of that, I believe, in St. Louis. St. Louis is a big community for family-owned, multi-generation manufacturing companies. And this people-centric approach is really, really gaining steam. I mean, we're part of AME, Association for Manufacturing Excellence, and we helped start a group in St. Louis that I think has 17 or 20 manufacturers in it now that are about that, about building out people-centric cultures.
Last question I have is, since we've been talking a lot about mentorship, leadership, and manufacturing happy hour, one of the most common ways I'd describe it is that it's a leadership podcast disguised as a manufacturing podcast. So what would what would be your final piece of leadership advice for the audience out there?
Oh, my goodness.
I've asked you some very unfair, broad questions today.
I think for me, what I've learned, and I haven't always been this way as a leader, what I've learned is leadership is actually about serving others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a term for it, servant leadership. That has kind of a religious connotation to it. Some people aren't comfortable with, but it's the concept of my primary role as a leader is to serve you and to help you grow, whether that's as a leader or whatever growth you want that to do, that you want that to be. I think that's it. And that means courage, humility, you know, all the things that are hard for us that are type A personalities. And
And
I think we grew up, especially people my age, we grew up, that wasn't the expectation of a leader. And so I've really learned that. Most of my leadership growth, honestly, in a 35-year career has been in the last 10 years, honestly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to, let's say, the younger part of our audience that has that 20, 30 years left in their career to maybe embrace that earlier on?
Find the mentor or the coach that embraces those concepts and those values and attach at the hip.
Yeah.
And just learn and then practice in your leadership doing the very same thing. I was fortunate to have some of those people in my life and certainly have a ton of them now. And just aspire to be one of them. So,
well, I think that's a very appropriate way to end it, because that's been kind of a common theme throughout some of these conversations today about finding the right people to connect with. I think very appropriate being at an event like this, hosted by a group like the Missouri Association of Manufacturers that are clearly doing a lot to connect the leaders in the manufacturing space in this region. So, hey, Kevin, I just want to thank you for joining on today's show.
Thank you. Really appreciate the time. Appreciate what you're doing to support it all.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story. Hey, thanks for listening. And a huge thank you to the Missouri Association of Manufacturers for making this episode possible and for really helping to bring this group of guests together. You know, Pavel and I had spoken maybe a year and a half ago about doing an episode. Cambridge Air Solutions had honestly just continued to pop up on my radar for the past 6 months, so I knew I had to interview with them some point. You know, it was a great opportunity to weave these stories together, and also just an incredible event all around. I'm a big fan of these regional trade shows. I think there's a great community vibe, and they bring together a lot of folks that are really able to make meaningful connections and often make some quick impacts in their manufacturing businesses at these events. You know, by the way, I should mention that these weren't even all the interviews we recorded. There are more video interviews from this event, so make sure you're following the Missouri Association of Manufacturers to stay up to date with all of these stories. Okay, so I'm going to share some of my takeaways from this episode about what it means to manufacture in the Midwest and specifically Missouri, and a handful of other takeaways as well. Number one, Paul's advice for reaching out to folks that are at the next step
that you're trying to get to was a huge one. He gave the example of a $20 million company wanting to become a $100 million company. Surround yourself with people that are already there and learn from them. I just said it right there in the last interview. Kevin was saying something similar about connecting with the right mentors. Anyway, Pavel's example of how the Missouri Association of Manufacturers connected him with the right people was tremendous. And I would say this, since I know folks are listening to this across the U.S. and beyond, if you're part of a professional association like this, that's a great way to leverage your membership in that association. I feel so many folks are passive members of their associations, and this was a perfect example of how, what I'll call active membership, how that pays off. Number two, if you're ever going to acquire a company, I would talk to Josh Shelton. Making an annual acquisition of companies that have owners that are nearing the end of their careers and need an exit strategy, I think that's going to be actually a very underrated strategy here in the coming years as we see a shift in the manufacturing workforce. So very cool to learn that one in that second interview. And then number three, the four values that Kevin shared. Their culture at Cambridge Air Solutions is attempting to live out these values every day, and they are care, courage, respect, and unconditional love. Also, the paradox of working yourself out of a job. I didn't totally pick up or capitalize on that comment in the moment, but Kevin was talking about how when you work yourself out of a job, you ironically end up with more opportunities. You, in fact, end up with a big job when you work yourself out of one. Something to keep in mind, especially in this day and age. As always, if you want to learn more, go to the show notes page, manufacturinghappyhour.com/180. There's plenty more there. Those are just some of my takeaways. It's a great spot to connect with all the guests in this episode, as well as the Missouri Association of Manufacturers. Plus, you can learn more about 27 North, Etched, and Cambridge Air Solutions. And I'm actually going to throw Missouri Ridge Distilling in that set of links as well, because that moonshine margarita they made was no joke. Okay, we're wrapping up here. So I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, ePlan and Gray Solutions. Thank you for making Manufacturing Happy Hour possible on a regular basis. Then my final call to action for you is, if you want me to come to an event like the Midwest Manufacturers Trade Show and Conference, well, hey, that's a big part of what I do to help manufacturers tell their story. Shoot me an email at info@manufacturinghappyhour.com with the subject line events. And I would love to start the conversation with you about how we might collaborate and tell the story of members of your association, or if you're a company that's hosting an event for your partners. There are a lot of scenarios where we might be able to collaborate. So again, shoot me an email at info@manufacturinghappyhour.com with the subject line events, and let's start that conversation. With that, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks for sticking around. Stay innovative, stay thirsty. We'll catch you again next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Manufacturing Happy Hour, powered by the Industrial Network.